sky of untouched blue, a river foaming over silver rocks, imagining the water washing away all pain and anguish. She gripped Rick's hand more tightly.
I hear the slamming of the lid, my heart beating louder. How can they not hear it? My nails break against the implacable dark wood, blood worn down over my palms, my wrists, muscles straining, helplessly and utterly without hope. Oh, the tigers that come in the dead of night, help me, help me! The Sibyl said she wished only to die.
Christy was weeping, not aware of her own grief, tuning in to his bone-cold sorrow, trying to tap it and divert it. She looked for sparks of light within the bleak world that might illuminate and carry hope.
Come out of it, Richard.
Trapped in my crippled body in a twisted, demented time.
No.
She drew on some lines that her mother had made her learn.
There is a wind on the heath, my brother. Life is very sweet. Who would wish to die?
Everyone I loved is dust.
We all will be, Rick, one day. You and me and Ryan and everyone. Today's baby is tomorrow's dust. Live while you can, Rick. Live and live and live.
His eyes had been staring at the roughly plastered ceiling. As Christy looked at him, his face grew calmer. His gaze dropped, settling on her face. His breathing steadied, and there was something like the frail ghost of a normal, sane smile.
Christy Roth, I believe?
Richard Neal Ginsberg, isn't it?
Guess it is.
Good to have you back.
Christy felt the strain of drawing the demons from the helpless man's soul.
Didn't much care for the places I've been. Too damn dark.
It's dark out, Rick.
Light in here. Light and warm, Christy. I feel real tired.
Yeah, me too.
Ryan had been sitting with the others, relaxing, half asleep. After an hour had slipped by, he stood, stretching, feeling the muscles around his ribs tightening as he moved.
Just gonna take a look.
As he stepped into the corridor, he nearly jumped out of his skin. His fist clenched, and he began a lethal crushing blow to the bridge of the nose, checking his punch in time, inches short of the sharp, quill-like nose of Ruby Rayner.
Shed skin! You were going to hit me, Mr. Carter!
No, ma'am. If I'd been going to hit you, then I'd have done it. Not a good idea to creep up on a person like that, Mrs. Rayner. Could lead to a nasty accident.
She recovered a little, brushing at her print apron, running a finger along the top of the banister rail, checking it for dust.
That girl Rosemary, she never cleans up. Oh, but that wasn't what I came up to see you about.
And what was that?
Is Mr. Ginsberg recovered? I hope he'll be at the 7 o'clock service on the morrow. It would be such a disappointment if he missed it.
I was just gonna check. I hope we'll all be there.
He watched her go slowly down the stairs before he eased open the door and peeked in. Rick Ginsberg lay fast asleep on his bed, breathing peacefully. Christy slept at his side, holding his hand. Ryan smiled and very quietly closed the bedroom door.
Blessed is the worm!
And blessed are the scales thereof!
Blessed be the fang!
And the hollow needle!
Blessed is the crushing and the coil!
And blessed are the rattle and the sting of the great worm!
The Lord loves the worms of the earth and all that crawl and sting!
As we do also love them!
The poison shall harm only the ungodly and the righteous sacrifice.
And the innocent shall walk untouched through all the lands of Canaan.
As it was in the beginning before sky dark and long winter, is now and ever shall be, our world never ending. Amen.
Amen.
The huge congregation brimmed along every bench and pew in the Temple of Snakefish, formerly the Rex Cinema and Video Palace. One of the twin guardians, Norman Moat, had just finished the introductory call-and-response part of the 7 a.m. service. His wife, Mary Ann, sat at his side with their son, Joshua, the apostolic apprentice, next to his mother. At a rough count, Ryan reckoned that virtually all the adult population of the trim Littleville was there, crammed together cheek by jowl. It was swelteringly, sweatingly hot inside the building. Ruby Raynor had shouted up the stairs a few minutes after 6, asking if they wanted some fresh-baked cornbread with eggs and grits before coming along to the service. They had all accepted, though Rick made heavy weather of the meal. The Freezy was looking better, like someone who had been through the fire and come out the other side, purged and cleansed by the experience. He'd walked with the others along the bustling main street to the church, helped by an old bamboo cane with a curved handle, which had been a gift from their landlady.
It was my late husband's. He got it from his uncle, who found it in a ruined shack up beyond the North 40 Well. You're welcome to take it, Mr. Ginsburg.
Wow. Thank you, Mrs. Raynor.
Ryan had rarely seen so many people gathered together in one place. Baron Edgar Brennan sat in the front pew, on the right, with his brother Rufus. An enormously fat young man sat next to Long. Ryan figured he must be the nephew Leighton, pilot of the Airwag. He was dressed in a suit of dark blue leather, and was so large that it looked as though the bench seat might tip up if anyone else stood. The last of the worshippers in that privileged pew was Carla Peterson, who had changed her riding breeches for a pleated skirt, but was otherwise wearing the same clothes as when they'd met her in the town hall. She had turned around as Ryan led his group in, favoring them with a smile. A smile that seemed to Ryan to be directed rather more at J.B. than at the rest of them. There were no children in the congregation. No one showed undue interest in the Outlanders as they were shown to a bench on the left, about halfway from the front. Zombie and his biker brothers acted as stewards, marshaling everyone into their seats, making sure that there was no smoking. They eventually lined up near the altar, looking like bouncers at a particularly unsalubrious gaudy house. Ryan had been particularly interested in seeing what the Moat family looked like. Before the festivities had begun, during the period of waiting for their arrival, he had studied the inside of their strange church. There was a large balcony toward the rear, which had been extended more recently to run around both sides of the old theater. The altar was on a dais, between old and faded curtains decorated with huge golden tassels. The chairs for the members of the Moat family were more like thrones, covered in gilt and crudely carved in ornate writhing snake shapes. The rear wall behind the platform was obscured by a bright mural.
Delicate, isn't it, lover?
Sure. Like having a war wag run over your face is delicate.
The painting centered on an absolutely massive Mutey Rattler. Bigger by far than the one that they'd butchered out in the desert, it had a silver collar with the name Moat blazoned across it in scarlet. In its jaws was a diminutive figure that was kicking its legs. There was a 3D hollow effect built into it that made the head swing hypnotically from side to side, and the tiny feet wave helplessly. Around the edge of the picture were a number of oil drilling rigs, vanishing away into the distance, that was blurred by a poorly rendered forced perspective. At the very edge, there was a crude version of the Sierras, snow-capped, tumbling out of the mural. The colors were extremely basic, glaring greens and crimsons, with sickly yellows and a sky of an eye-blinking and unreal blue. Ryan's rumination stopped suddenly when he realized that the prayers were over and Norman Moat was about to speak. He stood a little above average height and weighed about 240. He looked to be in his mid-50s, the mane of sculpted hair, a uniform silver-gray. His suit was